The Silver Screen Projects.
Welcome to the Silver Screen Project, where we look back at a series of films in anticipation of an exciting new cinema release.
In preparation for Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, we went back and watched Godzilla last time. This time we watched Kong Skull Island from 2017. Mm. Not really a sequel to Godzilla, came out 3 years later, but
yeah,
set in the same monsterverse.
We get a little bit at the end, don't we? This is like the MCU now, that's what they're telling us.
What did you think of Skull Island?
Yeah, I think it's a fun reinvention of the kind of King Kong film. I feel like it was a good choice not to kind of do, oh, it's 1930s and we're mm-hmm. going out to explore an island. It's similar vibes, but the change of setting is quite fresh. It adds a whole stylistic element, which I really like with this film. I think the island's fun. I think the direction, the cast. I think this is a very good film. I really enjoyed this. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, so I think last time we were like, one of the things we said about Godzilla is like, this is obviously the best Godzilla film in this run.
Yeah.
I think it may not be the best film in the franchise, because I think this may be a better film than Godzilla.
I think you might be right, yeah.
And like,
especially on rewatch. We said last week that, or last time, I don't know when how far apart these are releasing. I think Godzilla watching the first time is fantastic. Watching it second, third,
you're waiting for Godzilla to
Yeah, and they start with, I mean, it's literally a, you know, they're making a move against it effectively, aren't they? They're making start.
I think the new setting, as you said, it does kind of the traditional Kong Island stuff without then doing the New York stuff that is in the traditional Kong story.
Yeah, I made
story,
a note, like pacing wise, it's something like, it's great. 25 minutes we're at the island, 30 minutes we get full Kong. And this is almost a 2 hour film, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, I really like the 2005 Peter Jackson one. But that film is long. That's two separate films in one film, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, three, really. Because, yeah, you got Pre, which is about 45 minutes.
Yeah, and then On the Island and then New York.
And then New York, yeah.
I've been trying to convince Christina to watch that, because I was like, it is really good.
It is good. I mean, it has its problems, but that's not what we're here to talk about, is it?
No, we're talking about this one, old... what's his name? Jordan Voight Roberts' attempt.
Yes.
So yeah, we mentioned the setting. The 70s setting is great. Like the Vietnam War is like, it's literally the end of the Vietnam War, but that kind of vibes with like the outfits and the music, like all the characters seem really 70s, even though it's like Samuel Jackson and Tom Hiddleston, Brie Larson, like it's recognizable faces, but they seem really 70s. Yep. And like, even though they're on this island that is away from civilization, you can still tell it's the 70s.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the music, at some points it's like, oh yeah, they're doing that song, but it's like, if you're making a film that was kind of like a pastiche of like Vietnam stuff, you're like, you got your credence.
Comment later on about the music.
Yeah, I think they could have been a bit more adventurous with that, but I think that, you know, I think the cast wise, like you mentioned a few there, I really love Samuel L. Jackson as like this army guy who is like, from the start, you know, he's not ready to let the army go. Like he's got nothing to, well, he lives, I think they're Air Force or whatever, but
he lives in war. Like that's where he's at home.
And it becomes like this like Moby Dick situation with him where he's just like, right, this is what I'm going to do now. He doesn't care about his men by the end of it. Like he just wants to, there's some great stuff. Like the first time that he like sets his eyes on Kong and there's the bit where they stare each other down and Kong's like ripping a helicopter in half and there's a great shot of his eye going through and you get the bit with the flames. Like I didn't really see this kind of rivalry the first time. I think I was, you know, you pay attention to different parts of films.
Yeah, and there's the bit as well later on where he's consistently determined to go find their one soldier. Yeah. And he finds out he's dead and he's like, no, we're going anyway. Yeah, and that's when everyone else kind of has the realization that like he's not here for his men.
I think it's also like, what is it, Heart of Darkness, what's the other, Apocalypse Now, it's all that kind of inspired kind of thing.
I mean, I think the poster was a direct reference to Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, there's a couple of those shots like that.
Speaking of which, that first appearance of Kong is great, where it's like you're just kind of in that kind of helicopter Vietnam credence stuff and then the tree just hitting the we saw it in the trailer, unfortunately, but it's still great.
There's a load of great moments like that throughout.
And then you just see like the silhouette of Kong, and he's huge. He's one of the biggest Kongs we've ever seen.
I think at this point, the biggest maybe, or is there maybe ones? Yeah. I mean, he gets bigger as this series goes on.
Yeah, I've got some trivia about his size, obviously.
But
the design of Kong is great. He looks more beastly than a gorilla. Like a lot of the 2005 Kong is just a big gorilla. Whereas this Kong isn't a gorilla. He's like a gorilla,
bipedal, like humanoid. Yeah, kind of.
And his face is kind of more pointed instead of rounded, like the Peter Jackson one was.
Yeah, he's clearly not a gorilla. He's a kind of variation of that.
Yeah, he's a big ape.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great kind of moments. Like you mentioned that the ones that kind of stick in my mind. There's a bit where a guy gets like ripped in half by the two bird things.
Yeah,
that's again done against the sunset. It's a lovely bit. The bamboo spider. I mean, we can talk about the creatures in a bit more detail, that is a fantastic moment there. And it's like, how the fuck do they get that in this film? It's like, it's brutal.
I remember. So I first watched this with Christina, and she'd never seen a King Kong film, and I didn't know anything about the lore. She didn't know that Kong wasn't the only big creature on Skull Island. All of that completely like threw her off. And I was like, to be fair, that's a great way to experience we might as well talk about the creatures. One of the first ones we see is the bison that comes out of the water, who is just kind of big.
Maybe slightly more exaggerated. Yeah. And like the moss, it looks very,
the design looks great, and it's kind of...
But just massive. And I think the director, Jordan Voight Roberts, said one of the things they wanted to do is like craft like an ecosystem, make other versions, even the Peter Jackson one. It's like everything wants to fucking kill you.
Yeah.
And that's... It works for that stylized thing, like the bit with the bugs and everything. But realistically, you want it to be like an ecosystem.
Then we get the tall spider things, which are great. Like the concept behind that, with them just walking through the bamboo forest, and they turn out that some of them are legs.
And it's just like a silent like kill, and everyone looks around, and he's just,
and suddenly
like,
he's got this like bamboo stick going through his guy. It's kind of like, how is that?
And then when they start chopping it, it's like that gut, like, gushing stuff coming out.
It falls down, and you kind of see this huge, like,
and it's
body.
Kind of, it's like a, it's almost got a crab kind of face, like, hanging.
But the concept of horrifying. That is so great. It's kind of one of the things that, one of the most horrifying parts, I don't want to go back to 2005 but the creatures, Andy Serkis' death in that. Horrifying. So we've got some elements that the skull coolers. Great design, a very unique design. That's not just like a lizard or like a cat or something. The two-armedness is fantastic.
I think the director said that he based it off a couple of things. One is off Evangelion, the anime I've mentioned, the skull idea, and also I think there's maybe from the original Kong.
So the original 33 Kong, there's a two-legged lizard
thing. Yeah,
but so it wasn't quite as extreme as that. And they are great in the way they kind of run around and move, and
they kind of they're like a snake with two big arms on them, so they can do the kind of grabbing kind of thing.
And
some of the action we can talk about.
We also see the big stick insect as well, which is a lovely addition.
And the fact it gets shot and it's just kind of like, and it just like goes off, and he's like, oh, okay.
And it's kind of, it's like, you think Toby Kebbell is then going to be like a bit of a turn character, and then he dies like literally seconds later.
I've got mixed feelings about that. We'll talk about it in negatives maybe, because I feel like, I don't know, maybe there was something more to that. But and then there's the weird little bird things. They're kind of classic. They're almost like a pterodon, but little. They're not super interesting, but it builds this really interesting world. And there's also a big squid as well, but we don't see much of that.
Octopus.
Which
again, I think classic Kong fights an octopus. I think, what did I put as trivia?
Is it about him eating the octopus? Is an old boy thing, is it?
It's a reference to, I think, when they did, in the Godzilla versus Kong film in the 50s, Godzilla fights an octopus, and then apparently the director then ate that octopus after they finished filming.
Because there's also Old Boy, the Korean film, the revenge thing, where he eats a live octopus on camera, and some of the shots people have kind of made comparisons because he's sucking in the tentacles and all that. So this film is kind of, it's lots of loving references put together, like of this kind of genre monster.
Without it not just being like nostalgia bait.
Exactly, because it's not
it still feels like its own story.
Absolutely.
I really like Brie Larson in this. Like, she's really fun. I think this was a kind of around the time post Captain Marvel, where a lot of like the internet stuff was souring on Brie Larson, and like she's really fun in this.
I think this might be just before
Really?
Yeah, because
Captain Marvel's 2016. I've got a feeling.
I'll look it up. But I've got a feeling that this was before that, because otherwise it would be like three MCU stars in the same thing. And I feel like she hadn't been. No, Captain Marvel's 2019. And 2017. Yeah.
2017, okay.
Yeah,
maybe not. But yeah, it's really fun to see her in this. Like, yeah. Her character's really fun as kind of the
war peaceful one. Journalist kind of.
That little scene where she does a little photo shoot with all the,
the tribe people. And you get a bit like that on the ship before.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about, we're just going through cast, the general kind of crew of the main lot of the, I don't know what you call it, the squad or whatever, they're all good.
Each individual personality is unique. Yeah. You get one that we've covered in the Project, the kid from Project X is one of the squad.
Yes.
John C. Reilly turns up and brings like some great comic relief at a time where the film was starting to get a bit too serious.
Absolutely. He's great. Yeah, because obviously you see his character in the opening, which is a fun little opening with the World War II 1944 bit, and we spoke about, you kind of see Kong straight up front.
On a side note, that intro is almost identical to the opening chapter of Island 731 that Bernard's talking about recently. Okay.
And when was that released?
Like 2014. It's literally a guy and a Japanese guy wash up on a beach at the end of World War II. Take with that what you will.
Okay. Yeah, what you're saying, John C. Reilly, and you see quite quickly that he's completely mad, and like the bit where he says to the guy, like, I'm gonna kill you tonight, and he's like, what? And it's like, what? Like,
what? And the bit where he's like, they're called skull crawlers, he's like, I've never said that out loud before. And it's like,
the same thing I was listening to with the director, he was talking about the studio wanted to cut down John C. Reilly's stuff because they were like, we don't know if it works and everything.
Yeah.
They saw a cut and they were like, no, you need to make sure this is in. And
yeah.
And the post credits, but the little epilogue bit with him going back to his family.
Yeah,
that was really all, that was all shot separately because they were like, we want a conclusion to this.
That's great.
It's lovely. And it's the thing about like the Cubs win or whatever it is. And it's like, that's the you know, that was when they won the World Series or whatever. I don't know baseball. But
it's World Series. Yeah.
And he's sitting there with his hot dog and, you know.
Yeah. It's a really nice, like, post credit scenes or whatever don't always need to be a tease for another film.
No,
it can just be a capping off of somebody's story, and sometimes the best ones are like this.
Tom Hiddleston, I think, is okay. I feel like his
character's a bit generic, but
he has some cool action moments, like when he puts on the gas mask and has the samurai sword and he goes through, and that's a fun moment.
I think a lot of the concept of the Kong graveyard was quite fun, and then all the action in that is quite fun.
Cool,
with the ones Goldcrawler has got the camera, which reminds me of the crocodile from Peter Pan.
Right,
with
where
you hear like the noise around because you know it's about to attack.
It is very cool, and you can kind of see the muted flash kind of thing.
I think they didn't need to kill off John Goodman's character there. I think it was a bit of a waste.
See, I'd forgotten, because remember we watched the first episode of Monarch?
Yeah.
And there's a little bit at the start with him, and he throws the bag in the sea, and that's what sets off the events of Monarch 40 years later, whatever it is. And I was like, oh, so maybe he's still alive on the island. You'd like, I watched that film recently and he dies. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Because it is just like he's fun and he sets the whole thing in motion. And he's the main character for about 15 minutes of this film.
Yeah.
And then he kind of dies a bit unceremoniously.
Yeah,
it's
just kind of like the camera goes off and Skullcrawler eats him. It's like, I guess they didn't know what to do with his character after that.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
I think
the scientists. Yeah, well, I'll talk about it in negatives.
There is the other funny death of the guy who pulls out the grenades to like sacrifice himself, and he just gets whipped into the wall.
Fantastic.
And explodes.
He's a great character. Shea Whigham is the actor who
subversion of his death is just brilliant.
He's in the newest Mission Impossible and he's great in that. But his character is just like, he just doesn't give a fuck and he's just like going with the flow. When he's like eating after the first time they fight Kong and he's like, how have you got an appetite? And he's like, well, it was an unconventional encounter. And that's like, you're fucking understating this, mate. But death is such a fun, like, subversion.
Yeah,
exactly.
You think he's going to sacrifice and he's gone. I really enjoyed the final fight as well between Kong and the the big skullcrawler. I think partly because we've watched something else recently, which we're going to release after this, but Kong has weapons that he very much reminds me of Kai from Kung Fu Panda 3.
Right, okay.
Random reference. He's got the long things on chains that he's kind of throwing and hitting. And I was like, I've just seen a film where someone does this. Oh, yeah.
And I like the way that he gets the upper hand in the battle is using his strength, which is that he can use tools. And as soon as he gets his hands on that, it's like the tide's turned. It's still a fight for a while, but like before that, he's getting fucked up by it because it's like the mother or the...
I love the final thing of like... he just pulling out the skullcrawler inside.
Fantastic. Because we talked about with Godzilla last time, the final kill.
Yeah,
it's like brutal. And it's like, it's almost trying to one up that to some degree. Yeah. It's like fucking.
It's mirroring, isn't it? Like, hey, both these guys, their final kill is down the throat. It's a really fun film. And like, I think because it kind of, you get your action fairly early, you get your characters, it goes with different phases. You have your comedic moments when you want to, you have kind of serious moments. You never get bored.
No.
And then the film, like 2 hours later, comes to a nice ending. And you're like, that's a very satisfactory watch.
And you mentioned the characters, There are a lot of characters in this film, and I think it does a great job of distinguishing them. Most of them get used to some purpose, you know. Yeah. There's a few I'll talk about in a sec. It's like, they didn't necessarily need to be there. But yeah, I think it does a great job of juggling like the difficult pacing of a film like this and the kind of ensemble cast to some degree.
So, to go into negatives, there's the two scientists who do nothing.
They do nothing. I feel like they disappear for about half an hour.
I think I once read that Jordan Voight Roberts said that they had bigger roles, but they had to cut out a load of scenes to cut the film down.
Because it feels like they're the people who are like, because you're not sure who's going to have a romance, because most films have a romance.
Yeah.
And even Brie Larson and Tom Hiddleston don't really. They kind of, maybe they will at some point. They flirt a bit. And then it's like, well, these two are going to then if they don't kind of thing. And they don't really either. And it's kind of like...
There's a bit towards the end where they're kind of on the boat and they kind of have a lasting shot of the Japanese woman.
Yeah.
I was like, who the fuck's this? Like, why do we care about her?
Because
like,
this is what I'm saying with John Goodman. They start the film off because after intro, they're the main guys for a little bit, and it's like,
I don't ever care about those characters. And like, I think when John Goodman's being killed, it's like, well, why are these guys still here?
I think they probably should have been killed off too. But
yeah.
But speaking of getting killed off, the guy, what's he called? Toby Kebbell.
Toby Kebbell.
I feel like I get what they're doing. Like they set up, he's got the son and all that. But then he's on his own. He wanders around for a bit and then he just gets killed like pretty much off screen.
His character arc is a bit nothing.
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre. And I don't really... It feels like there's something missing to me there. And that's, you know... Yeah, that's really the only... I mean...
The other thing I've got is, like, the soundtrack. Like, it's a great choice of songs. It's very 70s. I did feel at times it felt a bit forced. Like, hey, guys... You know how Creedence always played in like Vietnam
almost
films?
Like a parody more than anything.
And it's like it's kind of close to being really good, but it just feels sometimes that pushing it a bit too hard to make it really good.
I think a good bit with the soundtrack is when they're putting on the Ziggy Stardust and he's like, oh, this is what music's like? Like, what the hell's this?
Yeah.
Like, that's so fun. And he talks about it being a time traveler and it's like, that's a fun thing. Like, it's a young guy showing a guy from...
And also, like, the Black Sabbath at the start of the first fight of Kong is great because they're all just kind of having fun and then the fight starts and you still hear bombs. Black Sabbath for a bit longer and then...
Until that one gets taken out and the whole thing changes.
That's great. Use of a song, but sometimes it's just like, oh yeah, here's Creedence.
I think they do. Do they do one of the two Rolling Stones songs that's always played, "Painted Black" or "Gimme Shelter"?
I can't remember.
I'm sure they do one of them, and I feel like that plus a Creedence is like, oh, you're pushing it a little bit now. I also feel like this isn't really this film's fault, but I feel like Monarch. Not that I finished the series, but I feel like it slightly undermines some of Randa's like characterization in this, because he talks about like spending the last 30 years trying to prove that there's monsters, and we see in the series that like in the first episode he knows there's monsters, and it kind of like, that's, you know, it's the way of an expanded universe. I'm sure it happened in Marvel about 30 times now, but it's like, it took me out of it for a moment because I was like, oh, it's nice to reconnect with this character, and then it's like,
this film's so clearly written that that character wasn't meant to ever appear again.
Exactly. And I think it's just a slight phrasing setting issue, because it's kind of like he does know there's stuff out there, but it feels like this is his first time. I guess it's bigger than maybe some of the stuff you see, but no, he saw Godzilla in an episode, yeah, didn't he? Yeah. So it's a bit like, it's a nitpick, yeah, more than anything, but
yeah, but that's what we're here for. Yeah. So I've got a few bits of trivia. Mm-hmm. First one, this movie features the tallest incarnation of Kong in an American movie, stands at approximately 104 feet. Peter Jackson's Kong, by comparison, was only 25 feet. So yeah. Just a big gorilla.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, and not a massive gorilla, just a big gorilla.
Yeah, like, it's like, did you see Mighty Joe Young or whatever? That's pretty much the size.
Yeah. The tallest incarnation of Kong overall is one featured in Kong versus Godzilla in 1962, who stood at approximately 147 feet, so 43 feet taller than this one.
Okay, okay.
However, it is stated in this film that Kong is still growing, yes, which we may see down the line. The next one I've got is quite funny, and some of it. Director Jordan Voight Roberts co-wrote and appeared in the honest trailers of his own movie,
okay,
highlighting some of the legitimate flaws with the film, such as massive, in his words, structural problems.
Okay.
Which, yeah, I didn't think it was too bad. Yeah. Lack of character arcs for most of the humans.
I thought you meant structural as in, like, the creatures wouldn't be able to hold themselves up.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Lack of character arcs for most of the human cast, he was mentioned. And the fact that there are too many human characters to begin with, he still has criticism.
Yeah.
But he stood by the film and attacked the video filmed by CinemaSins, shortly released.
Yeah.
He spent some time on Twitter attacking CinemaSins for their video, calling them trolls and countering some specific sins. And I'm like, oh, come on, like, cinema, we all know what CinemaSins
is. It's the lowest of the lowest.
Yeah, they will literally, like, if they go like 2 minutes of film they haven't found a flaw, they'll just write something random down. Yeah, yeah. Just
they literally write like too many logos as one. It's like, yeah, it's not anyone's fault. It's someone's fault, but this is the way things.
And like, it's intentional. Like, they're not. It's not legitimate criticism.
And it's also, yeah, it's to get engagement, isn't it? Yeah, it's the exactly. oldest trick in the book.
A lot of the stuff they just make up, and if you watch the film, the sins aren't even there. Or answered immediately. So it's a bit. He probably shouldn't get in arguments with CinemaSins. Like, come on. But so I'm glad he's kind of aware of the flaws with the honest trailer style.
Yeah, true.
The other one I got is Tony Kebbell did motion capture work as an ape, Cobra, in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, alongside Andy Serkis, who did motion capture for Caesar. Andy Serkis played Kong in King Kong and appeared in the film King Kong.
Yes, he did. So
Toby Kebbell's almost taken up the reins of what Andy Serkis did in 2005.
Yeah.
I don't know almost. Toby Kebbell's done any other like mocap stuff.
I'm not sure.
But yeah.
How many films is he in for the Apes ones, the whole trilogy?
The first two.
Okay. I saw the third one. Yeah.
Third one's pretty good, but yeah.
Is that the one with Woody Harrelson?
Maybe. Yeah, it is. Gary Oldman's the second one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was gonna say Ozzy Osbourne, but I actually meant
Joel Edgerton.
No,
I don't know who you're talking about.
Green Goblin.
Willem Dafoe.
No,
his
son. Not Willem Dafoe's son.
Yeah,
Little Osborne.
James Franco
is in the first Planet.
Yes, and he's not playing the same role as those.
No, what's his name in Spider-Man?
Harry Osborne.
Yeah,
yeah.
Anyway,
I had one piece of trivia as well.
Oh yeah, here we go.
So, Jordan Voight Roberts said that the original opening with the World War II pilots meeting and all that fight, instead of that, or as well as that, it was going to be this Kong fighting like a quadruped gorilla that was like a similar size, and then he was going to like brutally kill it, and it was going to be like, this is getting rid of like the old Kong. It's almost like a fuck you to Peter Jackson's one. But I think it was more of an idea than anything, and they were like, yeah, we don't want to be spitting on the old too heavily. So
I did see one trivia that was like the lore of the skull crawlers and Kong's parents and stuff,
right? Because they kind of tease a bit of that, and we kind of hinted at there's pretty clear teases for the next film in this, isn't it? It shows everything. You kind of implied that maybe Kong would be involved in the next film, which he's not.
They mention Skull Island quite a lot in the next film.
Okay. Also, they mention, we talked about last week, Hollow Earth is first properly introduced in this.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, will you do a Hollow Earth check-in each film from now on?
Yeah, because at this point, a couple of people mention it as kind of a crazy theory.
Yeah.
But it's no more than that, really.
Well, they kind of say that they think it's that Skull Island might be a contact point or whatever, an emergence point.
It's got a bit more legitimacy than it would have in real life.
Yeah, and the main scientist out of those two who have survived at the end, the man scientist. The male scientist at the end, he says like he wrote a paper on it and John Goodman picked him up and brought him to Monarch and all that. But yeah, we don't get any details and I think that gets fleshed out a bit more next film.
Yeah. But yeah, so the last thing to ask is whether this film got you more or less hyped for Godzilla X Kong, the new empire, Progress or Progeno?
I mean, it's a difficult question because
last time you said Progress for Godzilla 2014.
I did say Progress, and I think I'm going to have to go with my feelings from that one because although I agree with what you said last time, that it's going to be hard to top this, basically. But watching this does make me think, oh yeah, I mean, I'd like to see more of this world, even if it's cartoonified a little bit. So, Progress is my answer.
Yeah, I'm not sure where. I think, again, my argument last time was that because Godzilla 2014 and Skull Island 2017 are both really good, and you kind of look at the trailers for what it's kind of becoming. I mean, I sent you a poster earlier that just looks ridiculous. That I think the more I enjoy these films, the more I feel like I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
And I think that is kind of the case for the next one as well. I think pretty much all these films I like, which is, I think this new one might be the first one that I'm like, meh.
Right, okay, yeah.
So yeah, I'm going to go Progeno.
Fair enough.
Yes, and so that is Skull Island.
Kong Skull Island.
Not the TV series Skull Island that we both watched last year.
No, which I was going to talk about, but it's not this film, is it?
So, no.
But if you like that, we've got plenty more stuff like this on the same podcast channel. And we also have the Project, where we talk about projects throughout pop culture and history. But thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Kong.
Kong, bye.
Project.